All right. So again, what we've been discussing the last few weeks is the Eitz Hadas. The Eitz Hadas was a... It's the first page. It's number page 9. And the Eitz Hadas, everyone has their own interpretation of what exactly is the issue. The Malbim understanding this is idea because we're coming up with your own Svara. The Netziv. Netziv had a different understanding. Netziv had a different understanding of the fact that experiential, experiencing the evil rather than thinking about it just in the abstract. So this week I want to deal with Nechama Leibowitz, who deals with the Abarbanel and a Medrash. So on page 9. Some of this, of course, the first line is really dedicated to Jimmy. Some of our commentators and authorities reject the allegorization of biblical narrative as dangerous. Others enthusiastically embrace this approach, and there are those who take the middle way. But even those who tend to reject it or reduce their employment of it to the minimum, like Ibn Ezra, who devotes a large part of his introduction to his Torah commentary to attacking the allegories, chiefly aimed at the Christian, who wish thereby to justify the repudiation of the law in favor of faith in articles of their creed, admit that it is allegorical, hidden meaning of the story of the Garden of Eden, of Tree of Knowledge, that we must seek. In other words, very few people understand to take this whole story of Gan Eden on its face value. There's a deeper idea behind it, whether you hold that the whole thing is an allegory or you don't, but still the verbiage is written in such a way that there's something deeper involved. But the allegory...
Can it be both?
Well, that's what the third one is saying. Third one is saying it did happen, but the way it's being written is in a way for you to see a deeper understanding. But the allegorical interpretations given are various. We shall devote our studies this time, of course, to the approach of the Abarbanel. He questions not merely the nature of the tree of knowledge, but the reason for the prohibition. First of all, for the divine good will not prevent man from attaining perfection. So right away, he's starting off the Abarbanel. By the way, the Abarbanel's understanding of the Nachash, I think I've mentioned this before. The Nachash, he looks at this, was there was never a conversation between Chava and the Nachash. This, when you say the Nachash, he agrees that the Nachash here represents the conscience or a self-conscious of asking yourself. And here was a her observation of what was occurring. The Bible says she saw that he was going up and down this tree and touching the Eitz Hadas, and she is rationalizing this to herself. That's the Abarbanel.
So there was a snake.
Yeah, he's saying there's a snake, but it's not that the snake spoke. Not that the snake had feet or anything like that. I'm telling you what the Abarbanel is saying, not what you're saying. So the Abarbanel, this is his thought. Since God will not withhold the good from those who will walk in purity. In other words, right away he's asking the question, it can't be that the Eitz Hadas, if you want to understand it, Tov V'Ra, knowledge of good and evil, could have been withheld from man. That can't be it. There has to be something else involved. Because why would God hold back knowledge from man? The knowledge of good and evil is the perfection of man. How then could God have intended to withhold it from him? If it is maintained that the eating of the tree did harm because it involves knowing of evil, surely it was at the same time beneficial in involving the knowledge of good. Why then did he prohibit the good on the account of evil? That's the question. The answer, of course, lies in defining the difference between the character of the knowledge of good and evil before eating it and after it. Both the Rambam and the Abarbanel agree that it would be inconceivable to explain that the eating of the tree of knowledge implied the achievement of free will and the capacity of intellectual discernment. For man, the product of God's own fashioning, what was the whole thing of creating B'Tselem Elokim, could not possibly have lacked this concept. Of course, God wanted the creation of man, he had free choice. That was what distinguished him from all the animals. Here is how the Abarbanel presents his case. As our sages expounded the test, behold, the creation was good.
He says here, taking issue of
Ramban has a different idea. This refers to the good inclination, very to the evil inclination. In other words, the whole perfection of man lay in his possession of the capacity to choose freely between evil and good. Otherwise, he would not have been human, and God could not have commanded him. Right? What kind of a tzivui is there? Now, there's no tzivui if you have no choice.
Is this saying that the choice only came into being after she ate from the tree?
No, he's saying it couldn't be like that. It had to have, he had always had choice.
Right, because God commanded them not to eat.
Right, that's exactly what he's saying. From all the trees of the garden you may eat, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil you may not eat. Since the command can only be applied to one who possesses free choice and will. Right? Okay. Accordingly, the knowledge of good and evil achieved by man after his sin could not have been synonymous with free choice, or as the Rambam words it, the capacity to differentiate between good and evil. He states, the intelligence with which God has endowed man, that this is his ultimate perfection, was his before his rebellion. That was implied in the phrase, in the image and likeness of God. On account of this, he spoke with him and commanded him, as it is stated, the Lord God commanded to man. A command is not given to animals or one lacking intelligence. With his intellectual faculty, man differentiates between truth and falsehood. And this was possessed by him in his pristine perfection and purity. Okay? I mean, for example, I think I quoted this last week. If you look in the 24th chapter of Tanya, what he describes is that there is a non-duality understanding of the Shekhinah of God and the relationship with man. Man is always attached to the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Through his own actions sometimes, the way he sins, is he makes a separation. He has a delusional moment, whatever that is. Tanya seems to explain it, the next parak of dealing with, like, I'm breaking off from Kaddish Baruch Hu now, I'll do tshuva in a minute, I'll come back to it. But in this chapter, he makes a very interesting distinction between man and animal. Animal is never, it's not part of making a choice. He doesn't rebel against God. So he's always attached to God, per se. And in that sense, when man rebels, he gets even further away from God. You know, there's a, you know, the Medrash says that either man was created on the last day to show that he's the lowest animal, he's the lowest of creation, or to show everything is before him, he's greater than them.
Could be both.
Well, that's exactly what I would say is the pshat in Tanya. To say, well, depending how you act, how you act in your relationship to the Kaddish Baruch Hu. In other words, man can rebel. Animals can't rebel. They don't have a bechirat chavshus. They're not rebelling. It's like a child. You're not rebelling.
You have two extremes. The animal can't rebel and just does God's will, and the angels.
Right, very good. The knowledge gained by him, according to the Abarbanel, after eating the fruit of the tree, was of a much lower order. And this is, that. Who was the Abarbanel? And this is going to be fascinating. I mean, Nechama Leibovitz is going to point this out. Who was the Abarbanel?
Secretary Treasurer of Queen Isabella.
Right? So he's up there. He must have been a pretty wealthy man at this point.
He was a very wealthy man.
Very wealthy man, right? Bear that in mind as he uses this, I think, to express maybe an inner, you know, one of the ideas that Abarbanel was, but we had discussed this a number of years ago about, for instance, the Rambam understands, he really believes in the philosopher king, that the best leader is to have one individual, the philosopher king, the one person who knows all, leads the people. Moshe Rabbeinu was the philosopher king par excellence. What type of government do you think the Abarbanel wanted?
What type?
What kind of... You think he wanted a king?
No. He wanted like the barons, the elites.
He didn't even want that. He wanted like a parliamentary procedure. He wanted to have, he said, if all the power is in one person, that's where evil begins. Right. What I really want is so many people to have power that no one person is really in control. You have to get everyone together.
Chaos.
You understand? He saw the tragedy of having a king and queen, of how many they could kill.
But before the tragedy, he...
Listen,
checks and balances.
The end of his philosophy is
checks and balances.
Where you have
no, the man of his philosophy gives you the English government, gives you Israel, gives parliament. That's what it was. He's really one of the forerunner ideas of creating that kind of a government. That's all. The knowledge he gained through eating or tendencies which were then strengthened in him stood. Listen to this. According to the Abarbanel, in opposition to nature and consisted of the conventions and values created and fabricated by man. Illusory values, preoccupation with his results and forfeiting of eternal ones. He's going to focus now on riches. Abarbanel digresses into a tirade against civilization. Human inventions and man's divorcement from the natural path mapped out for him by his creator. Okay. The underlying intention of the chapter is to stress that God created man in his intellectual image, by which he was prompted to strive to perfect his soul in acknowledgement of his creator and imitations of his wisdom. Right? That's step number one. What was the purpose of creation of man? To be constantly attached to the Almighty, knowledge of the Almighty, study of the Almighty, study of the Torah, whatever, how are you going to put it, but purely an attachment to the spiritual world. Inside a goof that still has to be part of this world. For the perfection of the image lies in its closest approximation to the form impressed on it. God also made available all the things necessary for human existence. Food, drink, fruits of the garden, which he planted in the waters of its rivers. All of this in its natural state, requiring no labor or toil or human exertion. Right? In the Gan Eden, everything is set for you.
Welfare
state. All was at his disposal, so that he need not burden himself in satisfying his bodily needs, but could concentrate on the perfection of his soul, for which the purpose he was created. Okay? On this account, God commanded him to rest, content with the natural things he had furnished him, and not be attracted to luxuries, which require resort to human artifice and worldly things, so that his intellect should not be diverted to the assuring of physical comforts, which is the reverse of spiritual perfection that is ultimately aimed.
What are luxuries in this context?
He's not defining that. I will tell you, when you talk about luxuries, later on, history records that many of the Chachamim blamed the Jews, in a sense, for the expulsion by saying they built the largest houses in Spain. They should not, in other words, I saw something yesterday. I want to write a letter to Yair Hoffman. He writes on the Five Towns Jewish Mess, whatever it's called. And under the guise of, he writes the halachic musings. He's very good. Some reason, I don't know, this is called the Blade.
Yeah, now do you agree with them that they have to bench Gomel?
I don't even care. I found it so distasteful that he was just describing, this. It's a luxury. To me, it's a chil Hashem. Oh, it's $195 per person to take it to, to take it into the city. For business people, if you want, you can take this now. They're trying to figure out maybe you'll see your children in Lakewood. And It's like...
Well, what are we talking about?
It's a helicopter.
It's a helicopter. What is this?
He was joking with that. No,
I didn't really like that.
Okay, so certain people from the five towns are using it. It
sounds like a Tongan chain. It takes 5 minutes down. That's what it sounds like.
You read it. It wasn't. But I really was bothered by it.
Did you agree, though, with the halacha that
yeah, it's not the question of the halacha. But
I was joking.
I don't know. What? You don't. It's only 7 minutes. Anyhow.
So he was railing against people who do that?
No, he was talking about it. He was saying over this, basically, should you say Berachas Hagama? I don't know if he said, it all depends on the fear. You have to go by the fear. That's a whole separate issue of what he did. The Rav didn't say Berachas Hagama when you were flying. He felt there was no fear for him, so he didn't say it. Going over to Israel, he didn't say Berachas Hagama. Well, he didn't go. Well, many say you don't even say when you're going to Israel. All right, it's a separate shiloh, whatever, and it wasn't even discussed properly.
Unless you go with Cheryl.
But that's what I mean. I'm saying that there is also that what the Bar Benel is also attacking, which was something prevalent of his time, was the opulence of the people. You know,
tzenua
doesn't mean wearing a shetel and wearing, I mean it is, but wearing a shetel and wearing a long dress, but that's one aspect of tzenua. Tzenua is also a matter of activity. You know, when you build a mega mansion, you're not being tzenua, you're sending it. When you make a wedding, and the wedding has, you know, sushi at every table, and you get to a point where a person realizes, oh, he spent $250,000 on a wedding, that's not being tzenua. You're sending a message that's incongruous, I think, with being a Torah Jew. It's not the way to act in the world. That's what he is attacking here. The meaning
have to do with our topic.
You'll see. That's what he's saying. The meaning of the decree and command. Stop. Of all the trees of the garden you may certainly eat, was I do not forbid you to the things essential for your bodily sustenance. From the trees of the garden and the trees of life. But you may not actually eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, by which is meant the indulgence in and the study of worldly things, what is good and that should be pursued and the evil to be avoided, though you may look upon it and touch it, which is minimal indulgence. Just so much as it is absolutely necessary.
Let him finish.
I'm not denying that it seems that it's being, you know, kvetched into it. I'm not denying it. My point is to show it's a hashkafa also that he's trying to give across. You know, Gary Golgar told me something many, many, many years ago, and I think it's something. He used to take off 6 months. Like he'd work, he was in the stock market, whatever, he was on the floor, he'd make enough money, he'd take off the next 6 months he could sit and learn. God gave me enough money, now I'm going to sit and learn. It's an attitude of what a frum Jew is supposed to think about. I make enough money, so now let me do the Avodas Hashem that I'm supposed to be doing. We're not in this world just to keep on making money and luxury upon luxury. That's what he's trying to get across. It's an amazing, but I agree. It doesn't seem to be, but it's a Rishon speaking.
He's
giving over a Musar.
Yeah, Rabbi Brick.
Yeah.
But making a lot of money and giving it to Tzedakah.
Very nice. Okay.
That's very nice.
The Rav used to give 60% of his money to Tzedakah. So they asked him, but you're not supposed to give. So they say, you're only supposed to give us, you know, much less. So he says, everyone to get to Shemayim, they're going to ask him different questions.
Yeah.
He says, when they ask me, how come you gave 60% of your money? He will say, guilty as charged. Eating here implies the sustenance of the body from that food, and the indulgence in it that the food ingested becomes identical with the body that absorbs it. That's what I feel like today. From this, only spiritual death can ensue. Preoccupied with the tree of knowledge, you will become divorced from the tree of life, which is synonymous with death. So this following text alludes, see, I place you before today life and good, death and evil, therefore choose life. it's I don't even care anymore. It's mamish the pshat, but it's such an unbelievable hashkafa to you, right? Like, look at the tree of knowledge of it, Eitz V'Das. But if you want the Eitz HaChaim, you got to know how you handle the wealth, the physicalities of this world, right? How much time do you spend indulging yourself in the physical world, as opposed to being in the spiritual world? He's not saying, and no one really says, listen, we're not malachim. We're all going to be part of the physical world. What are you doing? What are you doing on a Sunday morning? Are you sitting and learning? Or like Jola, you're going golfing. You know, it all depends. What are you doing in your, you know, there has to be a balance. All right, his balance, he's trying to say, do the minimal and the rest is spiritual. That is a level. You know what? It's just like I think Rabbi who's the founder of Hank?
Fendel.
Rabbi Fendel once spoke here between Mincha and Maariv on a Shabbos afternoon. I thought it was an amazing thing. He was talking about the history of Hank, and he said, when you open up a school, you have in your mind what you want it to become. And then you become realistic and you compromise. Everyone wants to open up the yeshiva of a lushan. You're not going to open up the yeshiva of a lushan. And what Sam said right now, just not happening. I'm going to open up this school. The only thing is you have to realize I'm compromising. But to keep that vision and say, that's the way I should be. I think what the Abarbanel, the way I would look at it is, we're all guilty. 10 o'clock, I'm going home. I can't wait to watch the Yankee-Boston game. Should I be sitting and learning all the afternoon? Yeah, I should go home, take out a safer. Maybe I will take out a safer and read it while I'm watching the Yankee game. That's not the proper thing. I know that. But you have to have in mind, what do you want to accomplish in life? What is the spirituality? What should you be doing? And then say, okay, look, I'm not doing it now. But that gives you the idea of later on to perfect yourself, to get to the next level. You know, if you take the attitude, I went to shul, I did it for an hour, and that's it. I'm yotzei. Now leave me alone. Right? All right, so it's very nice you went to the shul for the hour. And no one's belittling that, but then you're not going to grow to the next level when you say, okay, I went to the shul, I'm going to do a review, I'm going to do this. Eating is interpreted, this is beautiful. Eating is interpreted to symbolize indulgence. The eating from the tree of good and evil, the forsaking of the contemplation and acknowledgement of God, which is the aim of man, substituting material pursuits, the ambition to change the world by human artifice, the production of luxuries which the Abarbanel identifies with the pursuit of vanity. The Abarbanel gives expression to the idea promulgated by Yirmiyahu in his statement that the Jewish people went after things of naught and became as naught. In his illustrations of the eating symbol, eating implies indulgence and that the food ingested becomes identical with the body that absorbs it. It's more than you are what you eat. He's using eating as an expression.
Yeah, eating becomes a death sentence.
It's not the eating. It's exactly. But there's what about salami today. You're eating what you are, is what he's really saying is.
Eating represents a lot.
Right. When you focus on transgressions, you focus on the wrong things in life, your personality changes. Right? When you focus, you know, the Rambam has said it's almost worse. I don't know if he uses the lashon as worse, but at least it's definitely almost as bad. Committing a sins in the Gili Arroyos is almost worse just the thinking about it, because that never leaves you. Just the thought of it is removing you from God, is removing you from what you can accomplish. Right? The more you take stay in a certain type of world, that's who you become. It's like your friends. Who are your friends? You become friends with a certain group. You're going to imitate them. That's who you become. From which only spiritual death can ensure. Preoccupied with the tree of knowledge, you would become divorced from the tree of life. Okay. And this gets even more interesting now. This pshat that he has with Cain and Hevel, which the Ramban will disagree.
This is also the first one who incorporates the tree of life into his explanation with the tree.
First Rishon that we're bringing, yeah.
Yeah.
So it says that you're, if you go too much into this tree, you're taking away from the Eitz
of
Hevel.
Right.
At least not that we went to yet, yeah.
Maybe in a way of extending this, that it is the tree of good and evil. Is that, yes, we did have free will before they ate from that tree. But until the free will is exercised, until the choice is made, there is no consequence to violate it.
Because you don't have enough of an appreciation.
It's not even an appreciation. There's no, you're just, in effect, it's just,
right.
It's our inherent, we inherently are supposed to follow, Hashem expects us to follow it. It's almost like it was a reflex. We don't violate it. Yes, we have the choice, but until we violate it, we're just doing
you
what
you don't
we're
appreciate
to
what the Yisr is about.
Like the angels and the animals, just being what we're supposed to be. Once we eat from it, now there are consequences to not.
In the sense, what you're saying is, it's like, by eating the Eitz Hadas, man had the ability now to do greater forms of tshuva and to grow to a greater level. Because beforehand it was just purely theoretical. You're saying the anti-Netziv. You're basically saying by having knowledge of what really are the consequences, you want to say that then it's even more difficult to stay away from it. And
you have a greater chance to fall and a greater chance to rise.
And the depth of falling
and
is we much
have to,
deeper.
And we now,
right.
And all these things that the Barbanel is talking about are consequences of now having making the wrong choice. You know, by getting absorbed in luxury.
So the truth is, in a sense, it's just the opposite. I've always thought, like, there are many reasons why a person sins. And it's interesting, I was noticing in Tanya, I always felt like Tanya seems to be more of a, it's written for the believing Jew. It's not written for the non-believing Jew. Because since he talks about what causes a person to be a chote, the person to be a chote is really like the delusional thought that I could do tshuva right, I'll come right back to God. So these few minutes. I think there are many reasons. I think another reason could be that we don't really believe in Schar Va'Onesh. You don't believe, like, no, so all right, you know, so I didn't put on tefillin. What's the ramification? What's the ramification of it? You don't believe that's really a pagam to the neshama, you don't believe you're going to get punished, whatever that is. You say, no, all right, God doesn't care. So over here, but if I do something and I mamish get a patch, I see it. It makes my decision much more, like for instance, me and smoking. You know, like I saw the fact that how sick I would get when I would smoke. So I have no time for it whatsoever.
So
because of Mr. Waxman over here, I stopped smoking.
Well, you made that decision. You
but it was because
decision.
I saw the onus. I saw the onus.
Right.
I understood it.
Exactly.
That's the difference. So sometimes, I hear what you're saying, maybe.
And I would argue, even extending it, that it's a whole, we had to go through this whole process in history. And I think if you look at Israel today, it is the most moral nation. It has technologically the ability, and is doing it, of helping humanity. Even enemies it helps. It's all a process that we had to go through to get to the point we're getting to today.
I agree.
You know what,
of course, you have to be careful. You have to be careful where we go in Israel, because we could lose that, you know, because the next generation doesn't have the appreciation of history.
And because of that, they don't have the strength of science and other things. They don't concentrate in that area.
Who? So,
in Israel.
We are concentrating in science.
No. Only a small amount. The second generation is not like that.
I
don't know if that's true, but okay. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. Write that for Shema Kalena.
No, but he's giving you his life story, Rabbi Nell.
Yes.
This is finished.
So let's get to the next where he goes into Cain and Hevel. Nevertheless, a minimal preoccupation with bodily needs and certain deviation from nature is essential for man. I mean, he's not being silly. I mean, not everyone can, you know, live off papa. Touching the tree was therefore not prohibited. But since man did not rest content with that, but ate it, there's also a very nice pshat here. Why were you allowed to touch it? She understood as a gezeira. Oh, you can't. Or, you know, like, somebody said, oh, don't touch it because it's a gezeira. He said, no, you're allowed to touch it. You're allowed to touch it. You're allowed to indulge in it just a little bit. That's what he said. That's very interesting. The whole order of nature was disrupted. After man had been driven from the Garden of Eden, his descendants progressively deteriorated and created the various branches of man's accursed civilization. Now listen to this. Abel was a keeper of the sheep and Cain the tiller of the ground. Cain adapted the vocation of tilling the ground because he feared not God and ignored the curse of cursed be the ground for your sake. This is like, you know, right? One of the curses was that the klala was the yadam, how hard you're going to have to till it. So which was addressed to Adam? Pursuing material things and the accumulation of possessions symbolized in his name Cain, which comes from a Hebrew root meaning acquisition. Now, see, he's saying that working the yadama was a character flaw of Cain. Abel, however, the proud-hearted who pursued illusory honor and lordship became a keeper of the sheep. For this reason, he was called Abel, vanity, since honors and offices are vanity. In the development of our recursive civilization, the shepherd retained a certain advantage over the tiller of the ground. Now, I remember in folklore, who are the people who, especially the Christian world, who are the people they see greatness in because they took care of sheep?
David.
Moshe, David,
Yeshua.
And Yeshua. It's interesting, right? When did that develop? I don't know. But here, he's using that imagery to show the difference between Cain and Hevel. Cain, he's going back to the first words when Adam is being cursed. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to till this land. It's not going to be so easy anymore. So Cain goes to that. Why doesn't Cain do a different vocation if you know that this was cursed by God?
See,
he interprets that as a rejection of God.
Right, I'm stronger.
So he's saying that, you know, Moshe and David being with the sheep is a positive.
He doesn't say that. But I'm bringing that on. It seems to me, yeah.
There's a danger in that. You know, Hitler loved animals. That's a, you know, being
the
love of animals does not.
No, that's not. He's not getting into that. But there is.
Why
Hevel was vain? I think what
he's not saying Hevel was so great. He's saying
he was very vain. What is that vain? God is telling you that there's something you can't do. It's going to be cursed. No, I can handle it. Don't worry about it. I can handle it. Oh, Hevel. So why Hevel? No, Hevel is not vain. Hevel is just the opposite.
He said, Hevel, however, the proud-hearted who pursued illusory honor and lordship became a keeper of sheep.
Oh, I think that's a mistake. I don't know. Abel's offering was no better than Cain's, except in the fact that God observed the former's intellectual superiority. I don't know where he gets this. Since leadership and honor are the product of the intellect, honor saves men from noble qualities. Hevel was noble in character, a prince and judge over his work, whereas Cain was a tiller of the ground, akin to the earth which God had cursed, seeking out material labor, becoming a slave to the ground and animal possessions and not the ruler over them. Remember, at the time of this, you know, you didn't use the sheep to kill them. You didn't eat them. Possessions unaccompanied by honor is the cause of all noblesse.
So what was the purpose of being a shepherd? What did you do with the sheep?
Share the wool? Share the wool, I don't know. Make clothing. He opened up the first target. I don't know. Since he who seeks wealth and cares not for honor will be led into robbery and other undesirable activities. Hevel was superior to Cain in the nature of his occupation. Cain was occupied with artificial pursuits. For the daily plowing of the farmer to sow opens up and robs the soil. Hevel conducted his life according to nature without artificial labor. Cain was concerned over his wealth, oblivious to prestige, Ava looked upward, and therefore God accepted his offering, which was born from the living. According to nature, subject to no artificial tampering. This is what God created, and the ground is the opposite. Hevel, however, was not perfect in everything, since he preferred the conventions of political life. I don't know. Above spiritual contemplation, it was Shace who raised the true ideal, the third child. And Adam knew his wife, and she had a son called Seth. Adam knew that Seth would not emulate the prestige-seeking Avel or the acquisition of Cain, but would be in the image and the likeness attracted to true spiritual perfection. He therefore called him Seth, since he saw the world would become firmly founded. Shace is the foundation. The teaching that Rabbeinu outlines here is astonishing. Is this the approach of Judaism, of our prophets and sages, the manual label of human toil to preoccupation with the material improvement of the world? That was one of our first shiurim, right? Kivshuha. To perfect the land. Is man's use of the intellectual faculties given by God the result of eating the tree of knowledge? I'll remind you that even in the discussion, how do you know it's Yemei HaMashiach? Because when we go back to Eretz Yisrael, one of the things is that the land is finally going to really be producing produce.
How many mitzvot are tied
to
the land?
Exactly.
Matzah, you couldn't have matzah. You couldn't
right.
have mulav and etrogin.
Mm-hmm. And the improvement of the land, exploitation of nature to produce plenty for human enjoyment, is a violation of his trust. Professor Baer places Abravna's view in this perspective in the experiences as a statement of a leader. His hatred of civilization. See, that's where the Barbanel. His hatred of civilization and politics is not accidental, but firmly entrenched. He found support for this form of rabbinic dictum: hate public office and do not be familiar with the authority. That's Pirkei Avos. Man should avoid all forms of public office. Failure to do so would involve the holder in violation of all Ten Commandments. Interesting, like you know, what at the end of the Megillah, you know. The Rov Echav, you know, as far as Mordechai, right? Because Mordechai became a politician. Let a man rather live in retirement and live on the labor of his land, hands. Many of our sages were therefore artisans. How after Solomon, why were most of the Chazal artisans? I mean, especially the Rishonim. They couldn't do anything else. They couldn't own land. Be thou diligent to know the state of the flocks and look well to thy herds. Now, when you say, by the way, there is a concept of when you have rachamim on animals, you don't benefit. It's not a relationship that you have with animals. It's not a give and take. Yeah, I mean, it's what depends, you know, like sometimes you do it for a living. But for instance, someone said to me about my cat, per se, there is the rachamim you show to an animal that has no relationship with you is a greater expression of your feel for your humanity. You know, just like you have a understanding and a love for life, and you respect other lives, even if it's not on your level. So in that sense, I mean, that's what I would have, may have said, if you wanted to say the difference between being a shepherd, especially, so Mark said, what exactly are you doing for a living with a shepherd? Well, maybe that's a deeper understanding of why it was a more glorified vocation, because it may not have led to a lot of money. I don't know what money they had that, but it led to a certain idea of appreciating life. Land is nothing, you know. You build something, and there is
land
something accomplished.
Sustain life, though. Without the land, you can't
sustain
life.
So he's so taking on the Abarbanel, saying you're letting your own feelings.
What time is he historically? When was the Abarbanel?
1492 expulsion. He was there.
Did he write this before or after the expulsion?
He must have written this after, but he was there during the. He was there. For, he was the one who. He was the one who got the extension a little bit longer.
No, 20 from, years. He.
Right. So
he got them to extend by 20 years.
Was allowed 20 years.
He was allowed to stay, but he left.
Torah Kadima's father and Abarbanel were very, very close friends. Torah Kadima's father was a rabbi, even though he was a murderer. He was a rabbi. He became a guy. He changed his religion, Torquemada. And for 20 years...
Torquemada was halakhically Jewish?
He was,
can't talk about anything.
He was.
She's saying.
Does anyone remember that?
What is that?
Talk him out of? Can't talk him out of anything? You never heard that?
No.
Mel Brooks. Oh, man. Go home and watch Mel Brooks' History of the World. Okay.
Read some history.
Rather than to matter, so that when you want a garment, you do not go to the shopkeeper in town to buy from him, but make it from the wool of your sheep in your own home. Public office in the town is full of contention, but the righteous are secure as are the young. Okay, let's go to a Brahmana's whole life as a politician and a statesman in the courts of kings and princes ran counter to his own principles. Perhaps, or this is what Nechama is saying, I could be that because of his life, it became his principle. Perhaps his anchoring for a life of tranquility away from the tumult of cities, the intrigues of men and politics with a reaction to his disillusionment, maybe that, at any rate, the views were not formed by the text of Genesis. The Ramban takes the very opposite view of man's mission on the earth. Basing himself on the divine blessing to man in Genesis to subdue the earth, it is to lord it over the earth, to do his will with the creatures in it, build, uproot, plant, mine coppers from its mountains. Man must not rest content with nature, but improve on it, develop, civilize, conquer the desert, exploit the natural resources. Only by doing so could he see the fulfillment of the blessing. And remember, I quoted with the Rav. The Rav said that the reason why Bereshit also started with creation of the world was to show that now to be Meshutav, to be a partner with God in creating the world, further creating the world, further bringing it to fruition.
Look at Israel today. To me, it's so clear it's a fulfillment of this, because they're subduing, technological developments are like way beyond in all these fields, but they're using it in ways that help humanity.
But
so
I think
subduing the earth.
But I think the Abarbanel is also trying, even though Pratim, they can say, all right, I don't agree.
Too. He fits too, because you can't use subduing the earth to get absorbed in luxury and your own arrogance.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that Israel is subduing the earth, but for the benefit of
right.
Mankind,
I mean that's what and that's what he's trying also to get, you know, whatever is necessary to do in the end, he agrees. I don't think he disagrees with the Ramban, you know. There is later on, I mean, in the interesting, now I'm thinking about it, the Munkacher Rebbe, I think it was the Munkacher Rebbe, or was somebody else who really thought that it was incorrect of the early Zionists to go back to till the land, to change it. That's Dafka what the Jew was not supposed to be doing. Was that? No, I know he was. But I'm trying to remember if he's the one who said this part.
No,
you know, you should go back and sit and learn. And
but
not
wait
for the
Shia. Right,
I'm just saying
that the Munkacher, whoever wrote this, I wonder if he was influenced somewhat from this idea in the Abarbanel, using it to say, from what I remember, he didn't quote it, but I could see it coming from here, saying, no, that's... We're supposed to be purely involved in the intellectual observance of God. So how's going to till the land? Who's going to make all this stuff? All right, when we were Sabta Ganecha, we were saying over there, when you're all following God, someone else will take care of it. All right. Anyhow.
Did the Abarbanel
say that
Shem
was the ultimate?
Yeah.
So he was sort of in the middle between the two.
Meaning what? He still was...
He was in this world, he was in that world.
Minimally in this world, right?
But what would he say about the fact that there are so many mitzvot tied to the land? So how do you explain that? What we're supposed to just disregard those mitzvot?
I think he's speaking in extreme.
That somebody else would.
Because you can only do
shemitah
and
right.
I think
he's speaking in extremes, but not as this is what I want you to do every day. I think he's trying to get a point across using that in this particular situation. This is how he interprets it. I don't think he thought that everyone in agriculture was wrong. You know, oh, you can't do. You know, I don't think he meant that. Yeah. Comes a medrash totally, and I think this is very nice. The way we're going to still come back to this topic, but this medrash I think I've mentioned before. Amar Rav Pinchas ben Yair, the Hebrew on the bottom. Ha'etz hazeh ad shelo ochel mimenu adam arishon lo nikra shemo ela etz. Totally different answer right now. Totally different answer. We've been folking with Yodea, you know, Tov v'ra. What was it? What was the Tov? What
just
was the Ra?
Plain, simple
he said it was an Eitz. B'vad kishar kol ha'Eitzim. Avol mishalcha v'aval gzirasa al-Kadosh Baruch Hu nikru shemo Eitz hadas Tov v'ra Hashem sofo. It now became defined at the Eitz hadas. Tov v'ra. Kemoshim atzinu. Dvarim rabim shenikra shemam al shem sofam. Where do you see this? Shelo nikra eitz ad shem etchila, mitshuvas ha'isha l'nachash. What was the answer of the woman to the nachash? Re'em asher yishivas mepriya eitz, asher betoch hagan, omra l'kem lo sochel v'menu. V'lo omra v'i eitz hadas tovara. She didn't say the name of the tree. V'yod b'shosh omra kadosh baruch hu adam, Lama tenechba ma omar hamin ha'eitz asher tzivisicha lebilti yachal mimenu. You ate from that tree. V'lo omar me'eitz hadas. V'lo makro shema hadas tovara. Shayidei achiloso yodah ha'adam ra'os. Because he ate from it, now he realized the evil. Sha'ad shelo omar latzivu lo nigzar amo v'lo yigia v'lo kar v'lo chom. Until this moment, you don't have all the ramifications. You don't have a cold and hot and the difficulty of living in this world. Everything was perfect. Because you were over, you transgressed the tziva Hashem. Now, the tovara is not yodeya tovara. In the sense of you'll know what's good and evil, now you're going to know what this world can offer for you. You could have lived in a world, a perfected world, you would only know good. You would have a simchas, you know, when you leave a levaya, you should only have simchas. Right? Halavai, you should only have simchas. But how you know.
But how do you know it's good? If you never violate...
That was better. He's focusing on it. No. The fact that you didn't listen to it, Sivoy, that's what it was. If man has to really, you have to be, it reminds me so much of what Tanya is saying. Your attachment to God when you don't listen to the Tzivoy, he writes, doesn't matter what the Avera is. Yeah, in Achanami, some Averas you get Kore, some of you Chayv Misa, some of them you get a Patch, right? It's like a felony and a misdemeanor. It all depends. Yeah, in Achinami, some have greater ramifications to your neshama than others. But any time you do anything as you transgress, you're pushing yourself away from God. You're separating yourself from God. Doesn't matter what it is. That is so important for us as from Jews to realize we make... I heard something, it's beautiful... to understand of how we should approach other people. Lubavitcher Rebbetzin once said to someone, you know, why are you so understanding? You're accepting of everyone. And she turns to him and says, we're all sinners. Everyone sins in their own way. It's emes. It mamishes emes. It's an understanding of how you should look at other people. But when you sin, like we make compromises. Everyone makes a compromise. It's something which I've been thinking about. Everyone makes a compromise in their lifestyle, what things you do, what things you don't do, and you come up with your own rationale of why you're going to be chote in this particular area. But you have to know that every time you're a chote in whatever it is, you're sending a message to your own neshama, your own mind, whatever it is. A person doesn't wash negavasa properly. Oh my God. Yeah. It means that you're not taking the Rabbanon seriously. You're saying, it's only the Rabbanon. It's not, That led to do the next thing. The next thing, and the next thing. And before you know it, you may have done the Avera that you said, I'd never do anything like this. Yeah, you ended up doing it. Why? You took the rug out from under you. You already established it. It's like what does Chava say? I touched it. He says, touch it. Remember the whole story? Touch it. Touch the thing. Nothing happened. Most of us. No, it already happened. Most of us. In her mind, I will tell you, the pshat is most of us. After that, eating it, giving it to other Meisham, it all followed. It all followed. Because you already did it. You know, like I always say this time of year, Parsha Shlach didn't just happen. Parsha Shlach happened because of Parsha Baloscha. And Parsha Baloscha happened because of the various Parshas before. You know, just go back to the constant arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu, not accepting the good that God was giving. What happens right after the Shira? What's the first parsha we have? Right after the Shira. Right after we have it. The Mayimarim, right away, we started complaining. Right away. That was it. Now, it would have said over there, okay, we know the animal we're dealing with. And then the next step, then they come to, they go to Har Sinai. He's a little tardy. Times like, Egel Azov. Right? All this happens just, it started with a kernel of the Avera in the beginning. Whatever it was, if the Avera HaKaras HaTov, the same thing is, it's the same thing with what the Medrash is saying, is the story of our lives. When you're over an Avera, the smallest Avera that it is, it's exactly what the Tanya is focusing on. Whatever that Avera is, you have to understand that's a rebellion against God. We all rationalize. If you didn't rationalize, how would you do it? You come to a rationalization. No, you know, whatever that rationalization is.
Rationalization comes after you do it.
I mean, usually what happens is, even sometimes before, but usually the rationalization is, you know, in our world, it's the Rabbanan. The rabbis didn't really know it, they didn't mean it, that this and that. If a woman, you know, if a rabbi was a woman, we could have a different idea, right? You'll come up with everything. I mean, nowadays already you see that they're rewriting the Torah. I'm not surprised. You read like the conservative pshatim, they write in the Torah was, because once you already threw out Chazal, once you threw out Torah Shabbat Peh, I'm a rabbi, he's a rabbi. We're both rabbis. So once you throw that out, so okay, now Gemara, Shas, Poskim, we'll put that to the side. They had their opinion, I have my opinion, and now the next step is now we're going to go into the Torah itself. Oh, you think this is a Toeva? This is a Toeva. That's a Toeva. This is a Toeva. And then you rewrite Torah Shabbat Tzav itself. That's the Yetz Hadas. It's a beautiful pshat from a simple medrash. Simple medrash. All right.
By the way, Moshe was not.
What do you want to say?
Because when they asked him questions, he didn't like sit there.